This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for tuning into another edition of another Dolphins podcast. The 2024 NFL draft is just 2 weeks away. Joining me today, we got Kat and Houts. We are talking everything about the interior of the Miami Dolphins defensive line. And Kat, let's jump right into it. Is Miami's best path forward in 2024 replacing Christian Wilkins in the first round and just continuing the trend?
No. I wouldn't be irate with a couple of players here as far as the first round, but there's – because to me right now, how it's starting to really shape up is the 21st pick is starting to look like a prime spot for best player available. And the Dolphins have, you know, added some players on the offensive line and, you know, re-signed Isaiah Wynn, signed Jack Driscoll. You know, they're going with quantity over quality at both of those spots now, so that if somebody of value, like a cornerback, like Terrion Arnold, or an edge player like Laiatu, if one of these guys falls down to pick 21, you've got the option to take them instead of saying we've really got to fill this need.
Mm-hmm. Joshua, are they going to keep chasing that tail? Are they going to be a snake?
I mean, I think I agree with Kat here, and I think that's my approach anyway. I'm okay with what they're doing there. I keep joking that they're throwing those bags of potatoes and just trying to go with, you know, like he said, quantity over quality there at the defensive position. But I think that, you know, the way this draft's going to fall, I think they're going to go best player available. Every day that passes, I think I start to lean more towards an edge. But we'll see what happens, right? I think no one knows. Chris Greer probably doesn't even know until he's on the clock and he sees that bright, shiny toy, you know, fall right into his lap at 21. But is there even a Christian Wilkins in this draft? Like, is there a guy? I guess we're getting into prospects then. But for me, I'm just happy that we locked Zach Steeler up for his price tag, right? I mean, everyone's sitting here saying what Christian Wilkins is making, some of these other things. That was one of the good moves that Chris Greer has made where he foresaw, you know, down the road and got him under contract. Because, I mean, if you're Zach Steeler, you're looking at what everyone's getting paid, you're probably going to be talking, you know, about an extension sooner than later. So at least we have that one position or that one spot on the defensive line solidified. But who's going to play next to him is anyone's guess.
Kat, you made a great point during the regular season, and it seemed like, I don't know, week 7, 8, the Dolphins just flat out made the decision. We can't sign Christian Wilkins. We're going to sign Zach Steeler. We can't sign Robert Hunt. We're going to sign Austin Jackson. And that's just kind of the way they went. It seemed like a pretty smart idea because Chris Greer seems to get a little gripe as someone who doesn't sign contracts, extensions as early as they could at times. And there are perfect examples, but it did seem like he drew a nice line in the sand there. The Dolphins have signed 6 interior defensive linemen so far since free agency began. Most recently, Tyre Tart, which I think we can agree we're probably most excited about him. But Kat, talking this first round, who are some guys we can just get out of the way? They're too good. They're too great. The Dolphins are too good. They're not going to be on the board when they're picking at 21.
Well, yeah, and just to go back on Tyre Tart, a fascinating guy and the one I am most excited about. I've talked to some people more in the know that are Titans fans, bloggers, things like that. And the feedback I got is that, because a major question is, why was this guy extended at the beginning of the season and then later that same season was cut? And the feedback I got is that there were potentially some locker room issues, some personality clashes with Mike Vrabel, not just with Tart, but with a lot of other players. I'm not inside that locker room. I can't speak to that. But I do know at one time he was very highly thought of, and then that switched over just a couple of months. So I see that as a really, you know, all reward and basically no risk type of signing. If you can get Zach Sealer, Tyrre Tart, and I'll keep banging the drum for Calais Campbell at defensive end. Is it a great defensive line? Probably not, but I think it's more than good enough to go into the season with already. So we'll see that. And then as far as the prospects are concerned, this class is fascinating because it's a very, very deep interior defensive line class. I mean, I expect to see 12, 13 players drafted in the first, let's say, three rounds. You know, there are those, that caliber of prospects. And if the Dolphins can manufacture an additional third round pick or fourth round pick, if they trade down, I would expect them to really find value in this portion of the draft. But just going back to your original question, at pick 21, there are two guys that I would say that I would go at other positions, but my remote wouldn't go through the TV if they were the pick. Number one is Darius Robinson from Missouri. And this guy's 6'5", 285 pounds, really only did it this last year. But then again, he was moved more to the edge last year and really gave that stand up outside linebacker look at 6'5", 285 last year. So I like the comparison of Trayvon Walker with him, where he's big and he's powerful. And I know Trayvon Walker was the number one pick in the draft. He shouldn't have been, but they're similar. I mean, this is somebody with 35 and a half inch arms, an 84 inch wingspan. He's big, he's wide. And I think he's, because of those long vines, is one of the biggest, has really the biggest upside in this draft for a 3-4 defensive end. And he might even be able to help you in stand up outside linebacker situations too. So I think there's a lot of potential with this guy. And just look at last year, 8 sacks, 14 tackles for loss. That's quite an impressive season there in the SEC. And then secondly, wouldn't be my pick at 21, but I've seen him mocked there, pretty popular, Byron Murphy II from Texas. And he's pretty easy to figure out. He has an unreal first step. I mean, Aaron Donald's name's been thrown around. I don't like to compare prospects to all-time greats, but just that first step is unreal. Mm-hmm. He led all college football defensive lineman last year in pressure rate with almost 20%. So one out of every 5 snaps, he's in the quarterback's grill. My issue with him is he's very, to me, boom or bust, because after that, if he's not beating in the first 2 seconds of the play against the pass, I don't see a lot that he offers as a first round pick. So he better win in the first 2 seconds of that rep, or else I don't quite know what to do with him. But those are 2 important seconds. So he could certainly project to help with inside pressure. But those are the two guys that I see as players who will go in the first round and maybe temptations for the Dolphins.
Yeah, I think Murphy has been the one that I've seen the most, I guess, mocked, and just, you know, some of the buzz around Twitter. I have it pulled up here. As you mentioned, his pressure rate, 45 pressures, 3rd most in football, and then 21 stops in the backfield. So, again, I mean, when you're getting that production out of the defensive tackle, I mean, you said it, Aaron Donald, that's crazy. You know, that's, creme de la creme, right? That's 101. That's that holographic Charizard at the top. I don't know that there's ever going to be another Aaron Donald, but when your name's even in that category, you definitely have to have your ears perked up. So you wonder if he's that guy that falls 221, if, again, that value there might be worth going out there and getting. And then you add him to that unit with Anthony Weaver. Do I say Anthony Weaver? It's Anthony Walker's the linebacker. Anthony Weaver's the defensive coordinator. With him, you know, in that defensive line next to Zach Sealer, that's kind of exciting there. So, what are your thoughts, Jake? What do you think about these prospects that Kat's talking about?
I think I lean Robinson. I don't know if I'm reading this correctly, but we're talking about what he can do as an edge rusher and maybe on without his hand in the ground. Am I reading correctly that he started when he got to college as a nose tackle and spent time as a three technique? That, yeah, to me, kind of makes my eyes pop. Seeing what the Dolphins have done the last couple of years, especially with Jalen Phillips as someone who can kind of work inside and then bounce outside, I think about Anthony Weaver's defense, and I remember reading that the Baltimore Ravens, their rotation at up front, they didn't really lean into two major guys like the Dolphins did in Sealer and Wilkins, and instead it was like a six-guy rotation. Having the versatility of someone like Robinson does seem pretty interesting, knowing that he started there in the trenches and he's gotten a little faster, and that would be a really interesting development to see the Dolphins kind of go in that direction where he could be that nose tackle, kind of slide outside, because the Dolphins have those issues at edge. It'd be kind of like having your cake and eating it too.
See, the interesting thing with Robinson is he did play inside, but I'd argue he wasn't very good. And he was, if you look at you know, where he was projected before this season, I mean, you're talking a late round guy, but he was also playing in the wrong spot. So to me, he has to be an edge player, but on pure passing downs, if you want to move him inside and rush with three, yeah, I think that could possibly work, but his ability to win is going to be using those long arms and exploding into the offensive tackle. And you see that on tape. You see some inconsistencies, but you see the ability to do that. If they can just up the consistency with Robinson, you're talking about a star player. And another comparison that I saw on Path of Draft is Cameron Jordan for the Saints. A big, long, powerful defensive end. He's not going to run the arc, but he's going to use his length and his size to his advantage. So he's somebody that if the Dolphins are able to trade down 5-10 spots, get another third, get another fourth round pick, and you're coming away with somebody with the star talent of Darius Robinson, or star potential of Darius Robinson, yeah, I can certainly live with that.
Is there somebody, or through the mock drafts you've seen, is there that first round interior defensive lineman that it might be like trying to eat the cheese where you're just the remote might go through the window or the TV, whatever way you're looking?
Yeah, I do have one guy, and I don't mean to pick on him, but I see him popular in mock drafts going to the Dolphins at 21, and that's Johnny Newton from Illinois. And it's not that he's a bad player at all. I mean, he's actually quite a productive player. He's very high effort, beats single blocks, but when he gets double teamed, I've just seen him mauled too many times, and that's a deal breaker for me as a first round pick. And I don't, you know, Byron Murphy is not great against the run either, but he offers, you know, that unbelievable first step against the pass. I see Johnny Newton just being a very solid pro. If you get down and he ends up falling down into the second round and toward the Dolphins pick at 55, and you want to draft him and have him as your day one starter opposite Zach Sealer, with the ability to also, like Robinson, move inside to nose tackle on pure pass rush downs. Yeah, I could see that work and could see him being a good player, but I don't see him as a first round pick like many do. I see him more of kind of that late second, third round type of guy.
Yeah, for those that haven't listened to our episode with Baldy, he mentioned Newton, he mentioned Murphy, he mentioned these guys as well, but he also said that he would then turn and look towards the offensive line instead. So I do want to ask you about Newton, so I'm glad you brought up, you know, the fact that he's one of those guys that you won't necessarily throw your remote through the TV, but you definitely consider, right? So out of those three guys, it sounds like it's either Robinson or Murphy for you if the Dolphins were to nab one at 21, right? Are there any of those guys on day two, day three, well, you know, where the Dolphins are going to pick after that 21st pick that may catch your eye? Because let's be honest, you look at this unit, there's a bunch of guys that they can throw darts at, but they're definitely going to be drafting an interior defensive lineman. Which one of these guys really stands out to you that is believable, at least?
Yeah, looking at the board in general, Josh, you've got a clear-cut top three guys in no particular order, Robinson, Murphy, and Johnny Newton. And I'd say Murphy is probably the consensus first defensive tackle. But then again, the guys who were invited to the green room, I think 18 draft prospects were invited to the green room, and only six defensive players. Robinson was one of them, and I don't think Murphy was on that list. So that's kind of a, you know, sometimes they know a little bit more there at the draft than talk shows for the draft will say. But anyway, to answer your question, after you get past those top three guys that we talked about, Tavondre Sweat is the interesting one. This this guy's a knucklehead. I mean, like, look, this was the Outland Trophy winner last year. So he was dominant last year for Texas. I mean, and he's 6'4", 362 pounds, but he has two major red flags, really three major red flags. Number one, Dane Brugler said, and it's been said many times, this guy played more like 380, 385 pounds this past year, which is massive. I don't think any player should be that big heading into the NFL. Mm-hmm. So, but he won the Outland Trophy. So you get, but I'd say that what he did in college is not going to be as effective in the pros. So he gets into the, you know, the post draft, and you know, he really had the chance to say, look, over the next 3 months, I'm going to hunker down. I'm going to get myself in great shape. I'm going to show up at 350 pounds. I'm going to run under a 5 flat. And he could have been the Jordan Davis prospect of this type of draft. But what does he do? He goes to the combine. No, excuse me, not combine, Senior Bowl week. And he doesn't weigh in. Now, there's some controversy of how that happened. And supposedly, you know, there might have been a miscommunication. I heard that on one show. But it's like, I don't see what you miscommunicate about. Get on the scale. Everyone wants to see it. I don't see what the miscommunication is. But anyway, it's unheard of that he didn't weigh in, especially when a lot of people there wanted to know how much he weighed. The word was that he was over 380, 385 pounds.
That's crazy.
Now, he got down to 362 for the combine, to his credit. Mm-hmm. So now he's interviewing well, so he's starting to be in that second round area. And what happens, a week and a half ago, he gets a DWI. Mm-hmm. So it's all over the board, and you have to wonder with the conditioning, with the refusal to weigh in at Senior Bowl week, and with the DWI, there's a lot of red flags there. So I'm out on him in the first two rounds, but if they, to answer your question, Josh, manufacture a third or fourth round pick, yeah, absolutely. It's very easy to see the upside in Tavondre Sweat.
Are the Dolphins in a spot where they can take a risk like that? I think part of the issue here that I'm struggling with defensive tackle is that immediate impact. I think if the Dolphins fall back, is drafting someone like him in the third round going to benefit the team, let's say, by like week six? Now, I'm not saying come in and hit the ground running, but by like week 7-8, is he going to be on every team scouting report? Like, we can pop some holes up the middle based on this guy's, we'll just say, inconsistencies.
Yeah, there is some inconsistencies, but he does take up a lot of room too. Now, what's interesting with him is when I really got down into watching him, I thought that I was going to see this just big, fat, wide run plugger. He's actually unbelievably light on his feet, and he's obviously extremely powerful. Now, I would also say, too, with Sweat, there are some leverage issues with him, too. He plays really high out of his stance. So he's not that, even at his size, he's not a Vita Vea. He's not a Haloti Ngata, you know, they're so wired to the ground. They can get to the quarterback, but they can anchor and beat double teams all day. I don't think Sweat is quite there until he gets his leverage under control. So there are risks. There are a few holes in his game too, but for what he can do at 360 pounds, if he maintains that weight and takes this seriously, yeah, the risk could be worth the reward in the third or fourth round. But yeah, I mean, If you draft Tavondre Sweat at number 55, you're expecting a day one starter. And I don't know if he has the maturity to be counted on right now.
Dolphins kind of like going after those guys. Jordan Phillips, wasn't there another guy a few years earlier too, where it just seems like the
Weaver. What was Curtis Weaver's issue? Wasn't he like, there was something there off the field, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, I forget what it was, but He was pretty controversial. Well, I remember him being on doing an interview with some show where he was just outwardly laughing about how overweight he was. I'm like, that's not a good sign. I mean, the Dolphins got him in the fifth round. So, you know, late in the fifth round. So it's like, okay. And he's out of the league now. So not a surprise there. And that's, you know, that's where character does come into play. You know, Tavondre Sweat, you're talking about a guy with not weighing in at the combine and the DUI. 3 months before the draft, the most three important months of his life, is making reckless decisions. And that needs to be factored in. But yeah, as far as the risk reward, third, fourth round, I think it's there for him.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We had Mark Schlereth on last week, and he spoke about how the Dolphins, when they were, when he was in Miami playing in the Super Bowl, and he was just talking to his teammates, you know, I don't know how people can focus living down here and stay focused on football for, you know, 4 or 5 months at a time. And God, just hearing things like this, you do wonder if the Dolphins really need to set a standard. And I kind of look at the Heat culture in basketball, where there are just some guys, like, they've taken some risks in the last couple of years on some guys who are pretty big knuckleheads. There's a running back that comes to mind. There's an offensive tackle that comes to mind, where maybe the Dolphins, like, I like them trying to, like, give second chances and take these risks. But being in South Florida, I'm starting to wonder if it's maybe time to kind of just make sure you're making contact on some of these hits, even though it might be risky at times.
Yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, it's easy to have, it's easy to be tempted and when you start your career in Miami. And no, another question in addition to that is, if this guy shows up at 380, 385 pounds, it goes out and tries to play September football in Miami, how's that going to go? How many snaps is he going to get? Is he going to be wearing down the offensive line of the other team. To his credit, at Texas, he played a lot of snaps. So maybe he can. But as things move along and as you get more money, if you know, kind of the, he's kind of the defensive version of Mekhi Becton in that way. It's like the guy didn't get he wasn't in tip-top shape at Texas, wasn't in tip-top shape months after the season. Is he going to do that when he comes into the NFL, and is he going to take this seriously? So we'll see on that.
He's definitely intriguing, and I think, you know, at some point you just got to weigh the risk and reward, like you said. Before we came on here, there were two guys that kind of caught my eye. One was Brandon Fisk from Florida State. It looks like he might have ran the fastest 40 out of defense tackles from what I read. And then Chris Jenkins. I mean, I think we all remember his father, right? Played for the Carolina Panthers. So those guys seem to be that next tier under the first two guys you mentioned, Murphy and Robinson. So what are your thoughts on them? Do you think those guys could be viable options on day two? Where do you see them rank among these defensive tackles? And again, pretty cool that Chris Jenkins' son's coming out, but how old are we now? I mean, that's crazy.
Right. Jenkins, yeah, his dad was drafted in 2001. And he was massive. He was like Jordan Phillips. Mm-hmm. He was massive. Chris Jenkins Jr. is not that same way, but he's 6'3", 300 pounds, and his play is much bigger than that. And he has the bloodlines. And what I like about him is that he saves his best for the big games. When he was getting late first, early second round treatment, I thought that was a little bit too high. I think he's a solid third rounder in that area. Braden Fisk from Florida State, I can't get over the 31 inch arms. And he ran a 4.78, his vertical. All of his workout numbers were impressive. And he was a really good player at Florida State. Very tough, effort through the roof. Jared Verse said in Dane Brugler's draft guide that he was the only guy that – Verse said he's the only guy that can match his intensity when he was playing at Florida State. So there's a lot going well for him. But short arms, and he's had a lot of injury problems over the last 2 years. I don't know if he's built for the long haul. So, no, Jenkins, I think, is a solid third rounder. Fisk, I would be more tempted in day three.
Looking at this big bag that the Dolphins are working with in terms of all these different defensive tackles they've signed, what do you think is the one trait when you're, you know, skimming through these guys, especially when you're looking at the fourth, fifth round? And the Dolphins, as a team that really has had to eliminate their middle class, quote unquote, of the roster in a sense, just paying so many high-priced players, you do want to kind of identify some key traits with those fourth, fifth, sixth round type of guys. You can maybe lean on them early, maybe pigeonhole them into a specific part on the defense. What is that trait you think that the Miami Dolphins desperately need at defensive tackle?
You know, given the depth of the class at nose tackle and, well, just defensive line in general, I mean, I want to know, are you going to be able to compete for one specific starting spot for day one? Obviously, if you draft one of these guys in the first two rounds, that's the expectation. But it's a deep class in the third or fourth round. If the Dolphins, I know they don't have picks there, but if they can generate picks there. Another guy, and just two key examples of what you asked there, Ruk Arororo from Clemson is somebody who I think can be a day one 3-4 defensive end if he gets up to speed in training camp. Now, he's somebody that at Clemson, you know, as a freshman, he showed up, he was 265 pounds and didn't play a lot of snaps. Clemson defensive line is just naturally deep year by year. So he had to fight for his opportunities, and he has. So he didn't really get a ton of action until this past year, but you see him as a freshman, he shows up at 265. He gets a few snaps. He gets better as a sophomore. He gets better as a junior. Now you turn around and say, okay, this guy's 6'2", 290 pounds. And he has a lot of technique and footwork and hand usage to work on. But this is somebody who is getting better and better and better. And if you were to draft him in the third round, I could see him coming in and surprising early. So that's one guy. And then one of my favorite players here of this class, I think the most underrated guy, is McKinley Jackson from Texas A&M. The two words I use are squatty and slippery. 6'1", 325 pounds, and it's really hard to keep him under wraps. So he has the ability to anchor at his weight because of his squattiness, But when he rushed the passer, I was really impressed for a guy of his size. So he didn't test out the best athletically, but I think he plays much, much faster than that. So if the Dolphins are lucky enough to manufacture a day three pick, McKinley Jackson will be really high up on my board. I wouldn't dismiss Aurora going somewhere in the late second round. Not specifically to the Dolphins, but it wouldn't shock me if that was the pick. Wouldn't be my favorite pick at 55, but it wouldn't surprise me if Aurora was that guy.
He kind of feels like one of those players that's just destined to go to like Pittsburgh or basically anywhere in the AFC North, be solid his first year, then by like year two, three, we're like, oh, who let him get to this guy? You know, who let the Steelers pick him? It's just one of those guys who seems like the foundation is so solid where a couple of years of fine tuning, especially in a system with growth experience, I mean, it seems like he could be a real home run hit.
Yeah, and it's funny you said that because Roro's, the comparison that Lance Zierlein from NFL.com made was Justin Matabike, who was a third round pick of the Ravens, who was drafted as a value guy, was supposed to go a little bit higher, but fell down, had some things to work on. And now this past year gets 12 and a half sacks of just seasoning in that system. So that's, you're exactly right there, where I think realistically, probably going to be a late day two guy. So somewhere in the third round to a team that doesn't necessarily need him to start right away, like the Dolphins probably would.
I think the most exciting thing about Roro, other than his, I mean, the name, I'm glad you're the one that said that, but it's the fact that I look at his RAS score, 9.92. It sounds like he hit every parameter, but it does sound like what you're saying is he just keeps getting better. So that seems like the perfect, you know, player you want to bring into this defense and, you know, watch mold and, you know, become one. Jake was sitting there saying going to Pittsburgh, and I know they're different positions, and I was kind of, I know a lot of people were kind of high on Alex Highsmith, but that's kind of what I hear. Like, Alex Highsmith's there now, and this dude's just an absolute, you know, world beater. So hopefully he doesn't land in Pittsburgh. We don't need a Roro there, but glad you brought him up, Kat, because that's definitely someone that sounds like the Dolphins would have on the radar.
And athletically too, with Roro, like you were touching on, you know, 6'4", 292 pounds, runs a 4.89 40, 34 inch arms. So you're talking about somebody, like you said, gets better every year, tested out great athletically. He hasn't completely put it all together yet, but that's why in the second or third year, you might see a team draft him in the second round because the payoff could be big as a 3-4 end. And look at it, just touching on a couple other guys here too. Leonard Taylor from Miami is somebody who, if you look at mock drafts before the season, you know, a lot of people had him as a late first, early second round guy. Mm-hmm. He had a terrible season at Miami this past year, at least from everything I saw, where he only had one sack, 3.5 tackles for loss in 10 games. Not the impact you're looking for. But I also think now he's gotten to the point where he's projected as and labeled such a disappointment. And he came out as a junior after a disappointing year. Such a disappointment that now, okay, is this guy somebody who might fall down to the fifth round for the Dolphins? And if that's the case, you know, somebody who's 6'4", 300 plus pounds, definitely needs to improve his effort, leverage, has a lot to work on too, and did not put it together this past season when it meant the most. But the physical talent is certainly there with Leonard Taylor. So I think he's been viewed as overrated for so long that now if you're talking about him as a mid-day three guy, that he's now underrated.
Yeah, he was a five-star recruit coming out. I think he was the fourth overall prospect. And it's interesting. I'm reading some people here who say that they think he'd even be able to come in and start day one. And hearing that about a fifth-round pick, I think that's exactly what the Dolphins would need. My bad if you said, when do you think McKinley Jackson-ish Texas A&M would be going in the draft?
Consensusly, I don't think he's projected to go in the definitely not the top two rounds. Mm-hmm. I'd say third round might even be a little rich too, as not for me, but for where he's projected. I'd say right now, if I had to guess where he's going to go, probably somewhere in the fourth round. So not impossible that he falls to the fifth round. And if he does, I think that would be a major, major steal. Dwayne Carter from Duke is another player too, where he is actually, if you look at Tony Pauline's mock from a couple of weeks ago, he had Dwayne Carter going to the Dolphins at 55. That's too rich for me, but you're talking about a just what you see is what you get type of player. 6'2", 302 pounds, was the only three-time captain for Duke in their history for in football. So has leadership qualities, doesn't stand out in one particular area, not a special athlete, but as far as plug and play, if he were to fall down to the fourth round, kind of the same argument there, where maybe you can get somebody who's just a little physically better than you may have hoped for once he gets in the building. Mm-hmm. And now he's a starter for you on a rookie contract. So that would be fascinating. Actually, Tony Pauline had the Dolphins drafting Graham Barton in the first round, Dwayne Carter in the second round, back-to-back Duke players to begin with. I'm pretty sure that that's never happened before.
God, I was actually kind of interested in the idea of that. And then he said back-to-back Duke players. And for some reason, that just sounds so weird in my head talking football. I don't think I want it anymore.
I agree with you. If they came out of the first two rounds with Graham Barton from Duke and Dwayne Carter from Duke, it would just seem like a very underwhelming draft. And I know Barton's growing on me, and we'll talk about him more in the offensive line session, but yeah, I feel like Carter, if you're talking about him as a second rounder, and that's too rich for me, because I think he's somebody that you can find in free agency or a little bit later on in the draft.
Josh, I want to ask you, I mean, I said it before, the Dolphins have signed six defensive tackles so far. You got Zach Sealer, who's going to play or can potentially play, 90% of the snaps. Does Miami need to draft an interior defensive lineman?
I think they need to bring someone in, right? I mean, I think it has to. I mean, I thought you were going to ask me who I saw you stand out in this group. I was going to joke Benito Jones, but I think they have to bring someone in, right? You have to bring in someone that can come in, compete, a better talent than what you have on the roster, in my opinion. But they could also feel fine and just come in here and let them battle it out and just let the best guy play next to Zach Sealer, which is kind of, I guess, what I'm a little bit fearful. But we'll see, right? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but time will tell.
Kat, what's the horror story of if the defensive tackle position next to Zach Sealer downright sucks? Like, what's the worst case scenario there for the Dolphins? Because I've been trying to think about this, and I don't think it'd really give me nightmares. I'm not super fearful if, like, let's say interior defensive tackle number two is like a top two weakness on this defense. It doesn't seem like that's the start of Swiss cheese.
Yeah, and what the Dolphins are doing is they're replacing, Wilkins and Raekwon Davis, that three-man defensive line that rarely left the field, mm-hmm. with six or seven guys. Now, just rotating four or five guys instead of having, Raekwon Davis and Zach Sealer, Raekwon Davis and Christian Wilkins out there, doesn't necessarily mean it's better. I mean, I expect the talent level to drop off, right, but I expect it to be made up in other areas. Now, if you're telling me that at the end of the season, the Dolphins defensive line did nothing special, but they held up blocks and they stopped the run at a decent level, they were able to provide some inside push, and we can grade them as a B or a B minus unit with what they have in the building now, I would take that sitting here today, And the most important thing is for the Dolphins to not have themselves backed into a corner where we have to take a defensive lineman in the first two rounds. Kind of the same thing, I mean, going back 10 years, but like when the Dolphins drafted Juwan James in the first round,
it's a good one.
Where that was, they were so backed into a corner at offensive tackle, and they ended up taking like the seventh tackle in that class. And James had injury problems. He played well, but I don't want that same type of scenario for the Dolphins at pick 21 or 20 or 21 or 55 on offensive or defensive line.
You know what, Kat, you've done a great job this entire time talking about the draft. I have to say, I am not convinced that first or second round should be the scenario where the Dolphins really pursue a defensive tackle. But I do think you could draft one, and I'll definitely get hyped up around. I'll get hyped about a sixth or seventh round pick, no problems asked. So who are some guys later that we can kind of hang our hats on that maybe we can get hyped up about come, August?
Three players that I think are in the Dolphins range, when you're talking about them having right now a fifth, two, sixth, and a seventh, somewhere in this area, three names come to mind. Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa is really everyone's kind of small school darling, was not invited to the combine, should have been, but I can see why. He's a very filled out, defensive tackle that offers a lot against the run and the pass, and may not quite make it to the fifth round, but if he does, he's going to be high on the list there. And Matt Miller's seven round mock, I believe he had Christian Boyd going to the Dolphins in the fifth round. So that would be interesting. Jordan Jefferson from LSU isn't talked about a lot. He's in that three-man rotation there with Mason Smith and Mekhi Wingo at LSU. All three guys will be drafted. Smith and Wingo probably will be drafted higher. I actually like Jefferson the best, even though he's got the fewest amount of snaps. I mean, especially for this defense, 6'3", 313 pounds, 34 bench press reps, does the dirty work on that defensive line. So that's why I like him. Mason Smith may go in the second or third round. Mm-hmm. I am not a fan. Watched three games of him, and I understand 6'5", 310. He has the physical traits, but I'm just watching him for three or four games and watching him during the season. I just like do something. Make a play somewhere instead of, you know, I'm not a fan of Mason Smith. Anyway, going back, so Christian Boyd, Justin Jefferson, and Fabian Lovett from Florida State as well is a little bit unheralded, where, you know, he's been really regarded as just this 6'4", 320-pound wide body who is kind of what you see is what you get. He could be a fifth-round pick and be a nose tackle pretty quickly. And then, you know, you look at his workout numbers, the guy ran a 5.01 at that size and kind of made some people think, well, wait a minute now, this guy might be a little bit of a better athlete than he showed at Florida State. So yeah, once you get into the fifth, sixth, seventh round, Christian Boyd, Jordan Jefferson and Fabian Lovett. And there's a few other guys too, but I'll stick with those three as the ones I'm really hoping to get down to that spot.
Josh, would you lean into the unknown of a later drafted defensive tackle, or do you think you want one of these, beefier, sexier names to replace Christian Wilkins?
No, I'm good with that. Some of those guys sound like the perfect players for the Dolphins to target in a late round. Again, I think based on need and based on the way this draft's going to fall, defensive interior defense tackle won't be the way they go, but that's exactly why they're going to go that way, right? That's just the Dolphin way. They'll do the opposite of what we think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I wanted to ask you guys, everyone's talking about the draft, but the Dolphins are still trying to fill in the margins here. And one name came across, Aaron Wilson, a Houston reporter. He mentioned that the Dolphins were meeting with Carl Lawson. So I wanted to spend a couple minutes here. The Dolphins already added Shaq Barrett, but Kat, I wanted to start with you. The Dolphins clearly need to add something else in this defensive end group. That's why I thought it was interesting if they could kind of double dip with a defensive tackle, turned edge, something like that. But Carl Lawson kind of seems like an interesting name for the Dolphins, considering this is someone who fell out of the rotation in New York. He could have a little bit of an opportunity, especially early in the season in Miami.
Right. And what I think is going to happen at the edge spot, a lot of people have the Dolphins drafting an edge player, one of the top four guys at pick 21, mm-hmm. Certainly a possibility, but you've got to wonder given Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb. I know they're coming back from injury. I think Chubb is going to start the year on PUP. Phillips, optimistic he's back for the start of the year. We'll see. They signed Shaq Barrett. If they also bring in Lawson as well, is that a sign that they're completely just going away from edge there at 21? Possibly. And, you know, Lawson's somebody who's, you know, was with the Jets, but really showed the potential when he was with the Bengals and was a third round pick for them out of Auburn several years back. He it seemed like right when he was on the verge of stardom, he would get hurt again. That's been his entire career. So can he finally put it all together for the Dolphins? You know, if they get him cheap enough, I think it might be worth the risk.
Yeah, and I'm a sicko like that, right? I think kind of it's just a Dolphin fan maybe in me, but, you know, you hear these names, Carl Lawson. I don't know. That was probably one of the years when I actually, like, you know, could really dive in before children and get into the draft. I remember Carl Lawson's name coming out, right? You mentioned it, what he did with Cincinnati, showed promise. He started 17 games in 2022 with the Jets, you know, 7 sacks. So there still might be something left there, 28 years old, a rotational piece that they could sign for probably relatively cheap. I do think it's interesting, though, what you said, Kat, if they bring in, or maybe it was you, Jake, if they bring in him, if they bring in Carl Lawson, does that mean then that they're set at the position, or then, you know, do they go elsewhere in round one? That's the Chris Greer question that we all have in our mind, and what will be decided in what, 2 weeks? We're 2 weeks away from the draft.
There were some rumbles that the Dolphins were going to reinitiate conversations with an offensive guard following the draft. We never really heard too much outside of that. I wonder if Carl Lawson's the same scenario where the Dolphins have maybe starting to look like maybe 3 players in place that come June 1st, they might have contracts available. I'm curious if maybe Carl Lawson, the unnamed guard, and maybe OBJ are 3 guys the Dolphins have kind of maybe stuck close to at the party just in case they want to dance in the future, but they're leaving their options open for right now. I like the idea of I knew that was going to happen. I like the idea of Carl Lawson, but Kat, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, every time he had some momentum going, it just seemed like he'd suffer some sort of brutal injury. The Jets signed him to a 3-year, $45 million deal following the 2020 season. He instantly suffered an Achilles tear during his first training camp. I think he set a career high with 8.5 sacks as a rookie with the Bengals. A real interesting player, and I do think that the opportunity is there where the Dolphins need some help early in the season, especially. Lawson, you wonder, hey, if you can give us 4 or 5 great weeks at the start, and then, you know, you can use that to kind of parlay it into a contract. And then at the same time, we have Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb coming back. So then you don't have bad film coming out from being on the field too long. These are the type of signings that I'm going to get really excited about in the next couple of weeks, just because we have these proven products. And then it has that one sick thing that the Dolphin fans love, and it's hope. And someone like Carl Lawson, you can hope and see some sort of path where he could have a pretty good year in Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got a lot of tread on his tires, a lot of injuries now. But, you know, those are the types of guys you're going to find out there at this point, or else they would have already been signed. And a date to circle on your calendar, too, is the Tuesday after the draft, April 30th, because that's the day that you can then sign unrestricted free agents, and it's not going to count against your comp formula. So, you know, you look at Robert Hunt and Christian Wilkins. The Dolphins, I don't see signing anyone between now and April 30th that is an unrestricted free agent. If you were cut, then you can sign and it won't count, as a lot of our listeners know here. That's fascinating, because, you know, if you're the Dolphins, you want to make sure you keep those 2 third-round picks locked in. Absolutely. And you don't do something that's going to squander one of them. And I expect that to happen. But April 30th, yeah, I mean, the players that are out there, they can sign, and it won't count against that. Dalton Risner is still out there, I believe. And I'm a little surprised he is not a great fit for this system, because he's not a great athlete, but he's a solid player. He's a startable guard in this league. So if Mike McDaniel can make an exception and start him there at guard and sign him, maybe that's the guy that they're looking at. I mean, Robert Hunt wasn't the greatest fit in this scheme either, but we saw what he did. So there's room here on the interior line for not the best athletes. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, wasn't there just a report that the Dolphins were talking to a veteran offensive? Was it offensive line or defensive line? I think it was offensive or defensive line. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what comes of these next weeks. But there's definitely players out there. I'm glad you did say that day, April 30th, though, because they're definitely going to make sure they get them compensatory picks.
How does this Dolphins defense, just to wrap up here, what needs to happen to this unit for it to be disruptive going into next year? I just kind of ran through some numbers quick. I mean, they had 15 interceptions last year. Ramsey was number 1 with 3, but then you have Brandon Jones gone. He had 2 interceptions. Jerome Baker gone, 2 interceptions. And then talking sacks, you have Wilkins gone, who had 9. AVG had 6. how does this unit really kind of find itself again? They led the league last year. I think they were getting a sack about 8% of the time. Obviously, things blew up at the end of the year. They were allowing 145 yards per game on the ground. But, Kat, what's the one thing this defense needs to do, especially early in the year, to find some sort of production when you know you aren't going to have Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips? Is it that interior pressure, you think?
I hope the defensive line is good enough to tie up blocks for the stand-up linebackers behind him. That's why you're paying Jordan Brooks and David Long all this money. I mean, and then at edge, you hope to just be good enough, and you hope Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb get back sooner rather than later. But what I'm hoping for at pick 21 is that a defensive back of value falls down to that spot. Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold are expected to be taken before the Dolphins pick at 21. If one of them falls, I see that as a best player available situation. You can draft one of them and then get more creative with Jalen Ramsey. Now you have a secondary that's six deep going up and playing the Buffalo Bills that just lost Stephon Diggs. That's the advantage the Dolphins can have if they were to make a pick like that. Cooper DeJean is another one where I see him as more of a safety or a big nickel, but if you draft a player like that, I think that's kind of a best player available, immediate impact type of guy. So I'm always a big fan of stockpiling the secondary. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Is that a good idea? I mean, would you kind of be playing into the Bills' hand, a team that doesn't have Gabe Davis, doesn't have Stephon Diggs? You look at New England, I don't think they're going to be passing the football much. And then the Jets are the wild card if Aaron Rodgers is back. Is it wise for Miami to kind of load up in the secondary, or would you kind of assume that the entire AFC East is kind of going to lean towards running the football a little bit more?
I would rather the Dolphins head into the matchup with the Bills saying our secondary is an A and your receiving core is a C. Mm-hmm. And if it, cause to, for the Dolphins to get where they need to go, they need to win the division. To win the division, they need to beat Josh Allen. Right. And that to go in with that, just very specific advantage of our defensive backs against their wide receivers. If the Dolphins are two letter grades better, that's to me the quickest route to success.
Yeah, I think part of the reason I keep going back and forth between what the Dolphins should do. I like the thought of an offensive tackle long term, you know, what they could do with Teron Armstead gone, slide inside a guard. But also, you talked about it. We've talked about it several times. These corners are not getting any younger. So despite what you're saying going up against the Buffalo Bills, long term, you're going to need someone. So I really wish we had Cam Smith, seen something out of him last season, got better vibes than what we've heard throughout, you know, Hard Knocks and things like that, whatever it might be. But if Cam Smith can play, that changes everything. But if he can't, you're eventually long-term going to need a corner, and just bringing in a guy, like you said, a Cooper that can DeJean that can play, you know, safety, can move around a little bit, do a little bit of everything. It's intriguing. Quinyon Mitchell is another guy that I think since the first time we talked about him on this podcast, he has slid into my, you know, top 2 to 3 players in this class. So I'm glad I'm not the decision maker, but I do think, like we've talked about, like a lot of people are saying, this board's going to fall right down to Chris Greer, and hopefully they make the right choice when we have all those studs, you know, sitting there staring him in the face, because part of us has to wonder, you know, will he? Because we're talking about these guys in the second round that need to come in and make, you know, immediate impacts. We didn't see it from Cam Smith last year. We didn't see Channing Tindall, you know, Eric Ezukoma. We're still waiting to see him. And he was what, a third round pick, I think. So they haven't been hitting on these picks lately. They need to do it this year if we want to remain where we are, right? We don't want this window to close. We want to remain where we're at and have that long-term success that we as Dolphin fans have been wondering and hoping for 20 plus years.
Joshua Houts, Brian Kett, thank you guys so much for joining me today on another Dolphins podcast. I hope everyone out there has a wonderful weekend. Kett, we will bring you back out of the bullpen very quickly. We are going to do the offensive line on Monday as we wrap up our draft content here on another Dolphins podcast. But everyone, go have a great weekend. We will talk to you soon. And until next time,
fins up.